Welcome to Konoha Crush, a clandestine effort to exhaustively research and document events occurring in and around the village hidden in the leaves. I'm Ruby.
I'm Gwen. Hi.
Hi. Hey, we're doing the podcast again. We're here. How's it been? How has this last week been for you? You been up to anything?
Yeah. Well, I'm good, first off. Thanks for asking.
Of course. I love to ask. I'm doing pretty good, too, actually, now that you mention it.
That's great. The fuck have I been up to?
Well, you said already that you're up to something, so, like, you can't just back out on me now.
Fuck, okay, I started playing the first Legend of Zelda on stream. That was fun.
That was fun. I was there for that.
Yeah, you were there for that. What else? Fuck.
Yeah, I mean, I assume there's probably an anime you've been watching, but we can't talk about it on here.
Oh, yeah.
There's an anime we've both been watching that we're very concerned in our efforts to not talk about, to each other in general, not even just on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. More on that later.
More on that later. Oh, later in this episode or just later in general?
I mean, just later in general, right?
Like, okay. You know, all right.
They'll know when they know.
They'll fucking know. They'll all see.
They'll all see. No, yeah, besides that, like, I don't know, fucking not really, like, I don't know.
Been drawing shit?
Yeah, I've been drawing shit, I've been fucking working my ass off to the bone.
My god, that's so sad.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, I'm a busy bitch.
You're a busy bitch. I'm a less busy bitch. I've just been chilling. I started up playing Final Fantasy VII, and my product just play all the Final Fantasy games. Still really love Final Fantasy VII. It's interesting because this is the first one I've played that's this is the first one I've played in this project that's like, oh, I have like fairly recent experience with playing this all the way through, so I basically know how I feel about this, and it's just kind of like an interesting experience, like just going through it and like being like, oh yeah, I love this bit, oh I love this bit, oh I don't really love this bit, but I love this bit. You know, it's kind of like a change of pace for me. I'm not really a person who like replays or rewatches or rereads stuff all that often, which like might sound kind of strange when the premise of this podcast is me going all the way through Naruto a third time. But like,
yeah, but that's just because I made you.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically how it went. And I guess the other thing is I've been reading a little more Berserk. That's been going.
Still Berserk.
It's still Berserk, yeah.
Cool.
Cool, yeah. Hold on. Yeah, I think I had a few things I wanted to say about that. Let me try and get my thoughts in order a little bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess an interesting thing about, like, my process of reading Berserk is that often I'll hit a point in it where it just sort of feels like there is this sort of explosive growth in, you know, Kentaro Miura's ability to make the comic. Like, often in ways that make me feel like a little bit foolish for things I had just said about it. Like, I know on the episode recorded last week, I talked about how a lot of times the layouts are, like, fairly plain and sparse. And, like, I think they're all still very direct at the point I'm at. But, like, very shortly after I recorded that episode, I read a few more chapters. And, like, I was reading the part about, like, Great Griffith is in the torture dungeon and he's thinking about Guts. And there's, like, a few other chapters around there where they're talking about, like, the fucked up, like, prison tower and, like, going down into that. Where there's just this really, like, dense and compact and like intricate like stuff being done with the space of the page that I found really exciting, but definitely made me feel like a little bit foolish for like what I had just said on the podcast last week.
Mm-hmm.
But like that is fine. I mean, like it is exciting to see like there's a very real sense of like growth in the comic that is
Fucking like something that like I genuinely love is when you're reading like a long running like comic or whatever and you can see the art get better.
Yeah, I mean, like, because I've definitely read long running comics where I feel like they lose something over the course of going, and like that hasn't really happened so far. Like I keep having these like breakpoints where it's just suddenly I'm just kind of stunned by like the quality the thing has taken on, so I was having a really good time with that. And then like I got to the point where they break Griffith out of prison and they're like fleeing the prison, and I started to have like a little less good time with the comic.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some guys that get sent after, you know, Guts and Co. as they're fleeing the prison that are you know, perhaps indulging in some of the comic's worst impulses, I would say. And you know, I think even beyond that, a lot of that stuff winds up taking a little more of a plain quality on again, as it's like out of the stuff that feels very central to the progression of the book. Yeah, like there's the like monster criminal guy who leads like the criminal night squad or whatever, he's chasing after him, and that guy fucking sucks. And that stuff's not very fun to read a lot of the time. Like it kind of gets there a little bit once he like goes full big monster guy mode, and like Guts is fighting him in the forest, and like there are bits where it's like. It's playing into stuff that was sort of the groundwork of what the comic was at the start, where like you've got Guts fighting big monsters, but like it is being executed with like such a greater level of skill at this point that it just feels like a completely different thing, and it's like very tense and like very like gripping to read until like the guy says too much shit and it's like, oh, I hate when you're on screen actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's about where I'm at with the Berserk. Like, that's basically exactly where I left off the last time I read any of it. Mm-hmm. I'll probably, you know, keep talking about that just because I like talking about it, and you seem to like talking to me about it, which means it's good to have on the podcast.
I'm totally down for just like a week by week, like play by play of where fucking Ruby's at with Berserk.
Yeah, if you don't like listening to that, sorry, but you know.
Yeah, like you're bad, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what I've been up to. Do we want to get into Naruto?
Yeah, let's get into fucking Naruto. Hold on, I'm gonna take my shirt off first.
Oh my god, alright.
Alright, let's fucking do this.
Let's fucking do this. Let's try not to think too much about my shirtless podcast co-host on the other end of this fucking Discord call.
Look, it's fucking hot over here. I had to turn my fan off to like record the podcast. God, like,
that's right. I almost think it's hotter here. I'm really dreading that, but like, I'm sure I'll live.
Yeah, just take your shirt off.
You know, if it comes to it.
Okay. Episode 54, The Summoning Jutsu, Wisdom of the Toad Sage. On a roof somewhere, Dosu thinks he's going to kill Gaara. Despite some sound logic, he meets his end under a full moon with Kabuto and Baki watching from a nearby balcony. Gecko listens in from around a corner while they openly talk about their plans. The conversation wraps up, and they have a very polite exchange on which one is going to go kill Gecko. Gecko flees, and Baki catches him, and gets his ass with a wind blade.
Yeah, so, I mean, before we get into our episode proper, we have another new opening.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one. I like it.
It's a pretty good one. Yeah, I do like this opening quite a bit. I do feel sort of at loss in terms of, like, what to say about it, and compared to some of the ones we've had previously. I mean, I did speak about this very extensively. I really like Toshiki Tsuru's openings for this series. This is not a Tsuru opening. This is a... directed and storyboarded by Tokuyuki Matsutake, still has Hirofumi Suzuki as animation director on it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's like some really solid stuff in there. There's like, you know, it's kind of like drilling into that concept in terms of like what it's presenting of like here's the way that all of these kids are like, you know, they have the shared loneliness that they get brought in. You know, we get Naruto being sad and alone. We get Gaara on his own loneliness swing. We get the two Hyugas. And that's sort of like the concept the opening is going for, but I think it also suffers a little bit because it spends a lot of time just going like, okay, here's all the characters in the show, and like here's some kind of disconnected action bits that I think kind of get in the way of mm-hmm. the opening like fully standing as its own thing, even if basically every shot in this thing looks really good.
Yeah, I will say a big mistake I noticed, and like you know, it's not so bad in like a vacuum, but like next to the show it's on, it's really frustrating, is that they forgot to draw Sakura straight.
I mean, there is like a like very front and center, like here's the Sakura and Ino cut of them like being together, and like I don't know that they're gonna be in the show this much during the like stretch of episodes this opening is for. Like, I feel like they're in one of our episodes this week, and that might be about it. But like, mm-hmm. they still do get to be here as I guess the girl ones who have the most screen time so far. We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, and like if you want a little bit more elaboration on that thing I just said, it's just, you know, and Sakura like hanging out like in a field of flowers, and then Sakura being all like blushy and like eyelash batty at Ino for some reason.
Yeah, it's like I get wanting that, but it's just tragically not the world we live in.
Right. Maybe that's just Ino's daydream.
Maybe I can't really believe that.
God, that's right, because it's themes, right? Because then it turns around to like Ino feeling like loneliness as like a lesbian, right?
Yeah, it's all connected.
It's all expected. Okay, all right, we figured it out.
We solved it. We solved the opening.
Yeah. All right, do you have anything else to say about the opening?
I mean, like, I could shout out the cut at the end where Naruto's, like, standing up in the water and he's, like, shaking himself off again. I think it looks extremely good.
Oh, yeah.
It's Norio Matsumoto, so, like, of course, look extremely good, but, like, damn. And, like, I think it's fun that we get a shot of, like, the Sani and his children as, like, a sort of little bit of, like, hey, here's some connections between these characters, and here's this other character we haven't seen yet. I think it's fun when, like, an opening has a little hint of something we haven't seen yet to, like, kind of grab your attention. But in that, yeah, no, it's pretty straightforward. It's, like, a good one, but it's not, like, I don't know much more to say other than, like, yeah, I like seeing it. I like the song. I like how it looks. And then the episode starts.
So fucking rest in peace, Dosu, huh?
Yeah, Dosu is... It doesn't go great for Dosu. Like, he... I love the implication that he's just sort of been following Gaara around for days. He's like, eventually this fucking guy is gonna sleep. And, like, basically all this is achieved for Dosu is just kind of make him more tired. And then Gaara's just, like, sitting on top of a fucking... he's sitting on top of a big Shachihoka looking at the moon, and he's, like, talking about himself like he's a werewolf.
Gaara is just a werewolf in this one, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, and then Dosu's like, my sound is faster than your sand! And it turns out that's not really what's in contention, because it can't really keep him from being crushed by, like, Gaara, who's maybe a werewolf. You know, we don't really see what he's doing, but, like... His shape's getting all weird in the moonlight, so that's probably a werewolf.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about werewolves, but I know one thing, and signs point to werewolf.
It seems like the most reasonable conclusion we could draw at this point.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of watching that encounter...
Watching that encounter, we've got Kabuto and Baki, and, like, basically the sum total of what Kabuto has to say about Dosu dying there is basically just, like, lol, LMAO.
Yeah. But Baki is the sand jonin in charge of the sand siblings, by the way, if, you know, if listeners don't really recognize the name.
Yeah, I guess I'm probably, like, a person who just knows a lot of Naruto characters' names and will just say them in a way that might not register to people.
Yeah.
So maybe I should be a little more specific about that sometimes, but you got me covered, so it's fine.
Yeah. Look, I know because I had to go and look up his name real quick to write the recap.
I mean, we know this entire time, like, first time he shows up on screen, I'm like, yeah, that's Baki.
Yeah.
Kabuto and Baki are having their extremely suspicious conversation, and the thing I really love about this is how Baki's just kind of, like, increasingly, you know, like... unsure of what to make about Kabuto, because he's kind of like, hey, why are you just, like, going around and doing shit? Why are you guys just fucking making a mess of things? Like, I thought we had a thing going on. I think we were, like, gonna be all sneaky. You're just like, what's wrong with you guys? Why are you like this? And Kabuto's just like, don't worry, it's fine.
Yeah, no, this was the plan the whole time. Don't worry about it.
We were always just gonna fuck around. Like, you could, like, be all cool, like, you know, keep it close to your chest until you're gonna go and, like, attack the leaf, but we're just gonna fuck around. We're gonna have a great time. We're gonna be sickos out here.
Yeah, we're gonna be sickos out here.
And speaking of being sickos, there's a guy over there.
Yeah, you wanna kill him or should I?
Oh, it's amazing how much this story, it's really just like, yeah, I mean, you know, I can kill that guy, you know, if you'd like me to. And Baki's like, no, it'd be most polite for me to kill that guy. It's just common courtesy.
Yeah, no, you're the guest here.
Uh-huh.
It's really good.
In watching the scene, I very quickly came to the realization that I had confused Gekko with, like, a different Naruto character, and just sort of, or like, had combined them in my head, and just sort of assumed they were the same person.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of, also, of Genma, who has, like, similar hair, and he's got, like, a headcloth thing on, and he's got, like, a... You know, he's got, like, a thing in his mouth all the time. I just sort of thought they were the same guy for some reason. And, no, they're just two different guys who don't really matter much, and, like, make just enough of an impression to, like, vaguely remember that they exist.
Oh, yeah.
You can see how I could make that mistake.
Yeah, totally.
Not anymore, because I'm never going to forget that Gekko died now, because I've said it on a podcast, and I remember everything I say on the podcast.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, Gekko's fucking dead. This is, like, a weirdly high body count episode of Naruto. We got two guys dead already.
Mm-hmm. I want to say your little like bullet point talking point of like high body count episode of Naruto. Like when I first read that, I was like, is it really like Gekko died, right? Uh-huh. And I had totally forgotten that Dosu was killed right in the fucking beginning. Like I had just totally forgotten his whole deal already.
You're done thinking about Dosu. It's like Dosu's had his time with the spotlight. We've talked about Dosu, you know, quite a lot in this podcast, and now we're done. Never again.
We've talked about this motherfucker so much.
Yeah, got it all on our system. I'm gonna forget him now.
Yeah. Who?
Zaku? I'm not gonna pretend to remember Zaku better than Dosu. I can't commit to this. Do we want to move on to the next half of this episode?
Yeah.
Okay.
Naruto peels Jiraiya away from watching a trio of girls giggle and splash around under a waterfall. Jiraiya has him try to gather his red chakra, but it seems Naruto just can't do it, and wonders what he needs it for anyway. Jiraiya says he simply won't have enough of his own to pull off the technique he's about to teach Naruto, and that in general, it would benefit Naruto to just use as much chakra as possible from now on, since his stamina and sheer amount of special chakra are his biggest strengths. Jiraiya intends to teach Naruto his summoning jutsu, but before that, he needs Naruto to deplete his regular chakra. So Naruto makes a bunch of shadow clones and has them all fight each other. When that's done, Naruto signs the summoning scroll in blood and attempts his first summon. It's a tadpole. And some Anbu on Gekko's corpse.
Okay. You know, I hope that eventually, in the course of watching this show, we will get scenes with Jiraiya that are not introduced by, like, having some women nearby for him to leer at. But, like, we don't really get that this week. That's just kind of how you always know Jiraiya's about to be on screen because, you know, we get some girls splashing around. And it is, like, stunningly consistent this time.
Yeah. Also, I want to mention the girls right now because otherwise I might forget. Because I don't think I mentioned them again in future recaps. I might. I don't remember writing this very well. But, like, this group of girls splashing around under the waterfall is, like, a recurring thing, and like, can we talk about this for a sec?
What do you want to say about it?
Like, Naruto and Jiraiya moving forward are like training in that area for a while, like weeks, and it's always those girls showing up to splash around under the waterfall. So I want to know what their lives is like where these three girls meet up in the morning.
Uh-huh. To go to splash this waterfall, under a waterfall for like 8 hours a day.
8 hours a day. Go back to the hotel all day every day.
All day every day. Maybe they're getting paid for this.
Is Jiraiya funding this?
Jiraiya's funding this, or like somebody, there's like some mastermind pulling the strings to keep Jiraiya in the village. Be like, okay, I'm paying these girls to go to this waterfall every day. As long as Dry expects girls at the waterfall, he won't leave. This is actually what Kakashi is doing to help Naruto's training. He's just reaching to his wallet a little bit.
Oh my god. No, those are Kakashi's dogs with transformation jutsu.
Oh my god. I guess that's probably cheaper. Like, you just have to get a little bit of blood on you for that, and we know how Kakashi feels about that, so.
Right? And, like, they do it, too. Dogs fucking love splashing around.
Oh, god. We fucking cracked the code.
Alright, writing that down in my little bingo book about Kakashi.
Yeah.
Oh, my god.
There will be no mysteries of Naruto unsolved by the time we finish this podcast.
Oh, yeah. So, serious now.
Okay, yeah, so we get some more of, like, you know, Jiraiya talking to Naruto, and, you know, last week I talked about how Jiraiya is kind of the guy who's, like, willing to talk to Naruto, like, straightforwardly about a bunch of stuff, and that's kind of contradicted here. Like, there's an extent to which Jiraiya is just very much dancing around being like, hey, you got the nine-tailed fox in you, and that's the nine-tailed fox chakra. I mean, like, Naruto knows he has the nine-tailed fox in him, but not really what that means concretely, and Jiraiya's not really, like, helping him paint any pictures there, or like, not helping him get a clearer picture of that here. Or the extent to which Dry is just like cagey about shit in this episode is like I'm trying to figure out, like, on what level is just like, okay, yeah, this isn't like a really a dramatic scene to like spell out a lot of stuff, right? There's clearly a much more dramatic scene coming in one of our episodes this week about like spelling out the situation with Naruto and the Nine-Tailed Fox in more detail, so we're gonna save that for there. And like, you know, like that is probably the main purpose of it. But I also am just sort of sitting here trying to be like, okay, is there like a character justification for this? Like, is there like a you know, an in-story reason why like you wouldn't just say this? Like, I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I could come up with reasons, but like
come up with a reason. But I guess maybe it's not the most productive thing to do here.
Yeah,
it is just like a weird. It's just a weird point in terms of like how Jiraiya is both like the guy who will like, you know, say shit to Naruto mostly straightforwardly, and also he is like a character in Naruto who has to like hold back on information until it is most appropriate for it to be revealed.
Yeah,
it's a weird tension here.
Right, because like I can see Naruto being the kid that like learns it's the Nine-Tailed Fox's chakra and being like, well, then I'm not gonna use it.
Yeah, that's reasonable, right? And like, you know, there's probably an extent to which like nobody really knows how to handle this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's not like Jiraiya's really being all that careful about like a lot of other things, so I don't know how much he's concerned about that.
Right.
But, you know, in spite of this, like, kind of case, you know, there is, like, some nice stuff of Jiraiya being, like, a teacher for Naruto here, being a mentor for Naruto here. Like, I like where he's, I like that he's willing to talk to Naruto about, like, hey, you know, all of the, like, basic kinds of training that's been, like, really hard for you your whole life, it's like, this is stuff you don't really need to worry about because there's, like, other ways you can do shit and be good at shit that, like, is better suited to you, right? Like, you know, you don't have to, like, worry about all of these, like, granular chakra control stuff because, like, you know... There's other options, and, like, I just really like Jiraiya, like, being the guy who comes in after Naruto is in, like, this very, like, you know, like, is, like, a fairly, like, regimented style of schooling before this, and just is, like, hey, there's like, other ways to learn shit. I think that's great.
Yeah.
There's, like, another bit in this scene that I want to call out that is, I think is kind of cute. This episode and the previous episode have the same storyboarder. And so there's a bit where Jiraiya's like, hey, remember what I told you last time about, like, how you got two kinds of chakras in you? And, like, while he's saying that, there's, like, a very direct, like, mirroring of, like, the exact, like, shot where Jiraiya was telling him that in the previous episode, which I think is a fun little bit.
Oh, yeah. That is cute.
But anyway, so for Naruto to continue his training, he just needs to use up all of his chakra. And I think the anime episode's, like, best innovation over the manga is that Naruto's strategy for doing this is just beating the shit out of himself with a lot of shadow clones. Like, in the manga, he's just doing the, like, walking on water training for a long time to burn through his chakra. And I think it's so much more fun if Naruto just summons, like, 50 of himself and they all get, like, stoked to, like, pummel the shit out of each other.
Yeah, that rules.
It's really funny. Like, they are just all fucking amped about it.
You know, God, if I could make, like, 50 shadow clones, I'd be doing that shit every day.
Right? Like, I mean, especially because, like, once you realize, like, later in Naruto, we learned that, like, when a shadow clone disperses, Naruto gets all that knowledge back. So you're getting so fucking good at fighting yourself.
Right. It's good if there's ever, like, an evil doppelganger situation.
Yeah. Like, if Naruto ever has to fight his evil doppelganger, these 3 weeks alone are just gonna fucking...
Yeah.
Like, he, even aside from any other shit he learns, he's fucking ready.
An evil doppelganger that takes the form of his 12-year-old self, though, is maybe not...
Okay, yeah.
Is maybe fair. Not something that Naruto has to worry about for that much longer.
That's probably true. I also like that once, like, he's done fighting all of his shadow clones, Naruto is, like, very proud of being the strongest out of all of them, because to him it is a great feat to be the one guy in this fight that doesn't like dissipate into a puff of smoke if you hit him hard enough. It's a big point of pride for him.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's really hard. It's really hard to be the only one made of flesh instead of, like, I don't know, magic. What are shadow clones made of?
Magic, probably. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, right? Like...
I guess they're solid, but we don't know, like, how solid they are. Like, I don't know if they've got, like, organs and shit.
I'm imagining they're, like, a 3D model filled with smoke.
All right.
Or, like, a balloon, I guess.
Mm-hmm. They've got, like, enough blood for it to be, like, kind of convincing when they get hit for, like, a moment, but, like, it's not a lot of blood.
Yeah. This is stupid.
This is stupid. Naruto used up all his chakra, and then Drea like brings out the big frog summoning scroll, and there's a few details about this I think are pretty cute. The first is that I really love that this really important ceremonial frog summoning scroll has these cute frog drawings on it.
Yeah, it does.
They're amazing. It's like these really, really goofy, really simplified frog drawings that are, you know, they're very fitting for something as important as this. And there's another element that's like not really directly touched upon, and like maybe not even something anybody making this was thinking about, that I think is kind of cute, where like I think it's like kind of a sweet gesture for Jiraiya to like let Naruto sign this thing, because Naruto's dad was like, you know, if not the last person to sign it before Naruto, like one of the last people. Mm-hmm. I think it's like kind of a sweet gesture, even if it's not necessarily the intent of the scene to like give the kid that kind of connection to his dad, even if like Jiraiya is sort of arbitrarily not telling Naruto about who his dad is in the same way that everybody else is.
Yeah, even if he dies a few weeks from now and like his only connection is their names next to each other in that scroll.
Yeah. You know, give him something to leave behind. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
It's great. I guess the last thing I have to say about this episode comes when the Anbu are finding Gecko's corpse. There is like a very minor Naruto character who is like in the scene in the anime, but not in the manga. Mm-hmm. Who is the Anbu with like long purple hair, who I believe is Gecko's girlfriend. It was really sweet of the anime to let her be here for like discovering her boyfriend's like terrible corpse.
Jeez Louise. Has she been in the story at all yet?
No, I believe like she first appears like after this at some point.
Okay. Okay. I was gonna say, just like fucking dick move.
Yeah.
Like you give this guy a girlfriend that loves him very much with such a minor role that I didn't even fucking recognize her. But
no, I think she shows up later to be sad about him dying at like some point, like later in the arc or like at the end of it. I don't remember precisely.
Well, I hope she gets over it.
Yeah, maybe she will. Do you want to move on to the next episode?
Yeah, let's move on to the next episode.
Okay.
Episode 55, A Feeling of Yearning. A flower full of hope. Naruto still having trouble summoning a frog, and Sakura sits up in bed, worrying about Sasuke when her mom yells at her to get out of bed. The Hokage informs the Jonin about Gecko's murder. Some of the Jonin want to cancel the Chunin exams, but the Hokage says that'll just play into Orochimaru's hands, and figures he's probably working with another village. Sakura heads out to see Sasuke at the hospital and goes to pick up some flowers on the way, only to find Ino manning the storefront. Ino decides to come with her, and they both pick out their flowers, with Sakura deciding to get one for Lee as well. On the way, they run into the rest of Ino's squad having lunch at Choji's favorite barbecue place. We see the other Leaf Chunin candidates training, the Sand siblings having an ominous meeting of some kind, and Naruto summoning another tadpole.
Oh yeah, so this whole episode is sort of bookended by Jiraiya's training. Strategies have really sort of hit a wall where he doesn't really know what to do if Naruto doesn't get it right, so he just kind of watches Naruto do it wrong for about, like, I don't know if it comes up in the episode, but in the manga it says it's been like 2 weeks since the last one, so he's just kind of been doing this. This is basically all he's got.
Yeah.
He's just kind of sitting here, like, watching Naruto, like, well, not really watching Naruto, but, like, being near Naruto while Naruto fails to summon frogs for, like, 8 hours a day.
The dogs are still the dogs are still splashing around.
Yeah, so yeah, he's on the hook, but like,
yeah,
you know, he's got he's willing to work with Naruto more than a lot of the other teachers in Naruto's life, but you know, he's got his problems, like the fact where he doesn't know what he's fucking doing at all, even a little bit. But anyway, from there we got to Sakura, who's just kind of sitting in a room, you know, saying that she's really busy to her mom. And like, Sakura is actually very busy in her defense. Like, she does need to keep remembering what the final exam or the final stage of the Chunin exam is to tell to Sasuke later. So, you know, it's a big task.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
It's pretty big. The other thing I want to call out about Sakura's room is that she has a lot of like seemingly like empty frames. like decorating her room.
Yeah, what's up with that, huh?
Yeah.
Did they just, like, not want to draw pictures? Or should we be, like, worried about Sakura?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm a little worried about Sakura. Like, there's, like, shots that are, like, not the one I'm going to, like, put in the, that I'm going to, like, put in the tweet after the episode, that, like, have, like, a little bit of detail. Like, one of them is, like, a thing with a brown background with, like, some writing on it, and one of them is, like, sort of like a red outline in a frame that seems kind of like the thing that would be like, hey, you know, you can put a picture here. And then the rest are just like completely blank, and I don't know what's going on there. She doesn't have any pictures she wants to put in there, I guess, but she loves frames.
Yeah, I'm saving these for when I attend Sasuke's funeral.
Yeah, from there we got to the Jonin meeting. You know, everybody was pretty antsy. They're like kind of worried about if Orochimaru killed Gekko, and you know, Kakashi and the Hokage are like very quick to quell everybody's fears. It was not Orochimaru. It was just a guy working for Orochimaru. Orochimaru is in the village, but he did not personally kill Gekko, so like it's probably fine. Don't worry.
Yeah, it's probably fine.
It's probably okay.
Look, it doesn't mean, look, Orochimaru did not personally kill this guy. However, Orochimaru does have someone working for him who's strong enough to kill this guy. So don't worry.
Don't worry about it. The other point that I think is really interesting in this meeting is, you know, when the possibility that like one of the allied nations is like working with Orochimaru because Orochimaru is like basically the best guy to be friends with if you want to fuck up the Hidden Leaf. Everybody was like, what? But all these people here are... Everybody's like, what? But all of these people here are our allies. And Hokage's like, yeah, but the alliance doesn't really mean shit. Like, it's just kind of a spoken agreement, and there's not really any consequences for breaking it, I guess. Like, it's not really, but, it's not a big deal.
But they pinky promised. everyone swore on their moms that we wouldn't go to war.
It really calls into question the wisdom of, just sort of letting all of these guys into your village if you just kind of like shook on it one time and were like, yeah, we would go to war. But like, nobody knows what spies are, really. Nobody knows what espionage is, so it's like, again, it's fine.
What if part of the agreement is like, okay, tuning exams where we all meet up in one village, that's the one time we're allowed to do espionage.
You can do anything you want once you're in there.
Anything goes during the Chunin exams. Don't worry about it.
Right. I mean, like, it's fascinating because, like, in the grand scheme of Naruto, like, the Sand Village deciding to attack the Leaf during the Chunin exams has basically no effect on the alliance between, like, the Sand and the Leaf.
Yeah, right? It's like...
like, the... Yeah. They are cool again, like, before the time skip, even.
Yeah, like, hey, you know, no hard feelings. It was during the Chunin exams, after all.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine. I mean, and, like, frankly, kind of the same deal with Orochimaru, right? Like...
Yeah. It's like, oh, shit, you know, we were thinking about, like, we might need to, like, do something about Orochimaru, but we realized he only attacked the village during the Chunin exams, so we have no grounds for that.
Yeah, like...
He basically didn't break any laws.
Yeah, like, hey, you know, like, you're still a little bit of, like, a snake pervert, but, like, no hard feelings, bro.
It's fine. Anything goes.
It's like, yeah. It's fine. It's just the Chunin exams.
What's the harm of a little real war at our fake war that we're all doing together?
Right, that's basically the whole point. Come on now. Come on. Oh my god, that changes the conversation of like stopping the Chunin exams so much. It's really funny. It's like it's like calling time out, like, hey, stop.
Wait, no, like for real though? Are we at war?
Oh my god. Does the guy who spoke up about wanting to stop the Chunin exams like have a name? Is that a guy? Because I looked for a minute.
I'm not sure. Like, he didn't seem like a guy to me, right?
Right, but it's like his design was like just distinct enough to where I was like, is that a guy?
Yeah, I didn't look into this because I was like, oh, that's not a guy because I don't recognize him at all. But right. Like, right, but like maybe he's a guy. You know, if I'll probably look into it after this episode now that you've asked, because I'm not going to do a bunch of like Google searching on the podcast.
Yeah.
But like, you know, if that guy is a guy, we'll update you on that next week.
Yeah, because like,
or I'll forget.
He had more distinct features than like a gecko did.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that other guy you thought Gecko was.
But he doesn't have Gecko's like constant sickly anime cough, so can you really say that he's got more features?
I guess not. He's got as many features.
I'll balance this out.
But back to Sakura.
Back to Sakura, yeah. So Sakura's going over to Ino's flower shop, Ino's family's flower shop, to get some flowers to go visit Sasuke. I think this scene's pretty fucking lame.
Yeah.
Like, there's just not a lot to, like, really latch onto in terms of, like, investment in these characters as characters in their own right. Like, we kind of get the, like, oh, Ino's picking a flower, and she picks a rose for love, but then Sakura's picking a flower, and it's, like, a display of, like, actual care, and it's, like, you know, it's a sign to us that Sakura is, you know, more invested in Sasuke on this deeper level beyond just, like, just the pursuit of Sasuke is this like ideal or whatever, but like I don't fucking care. Like,
yeah, who fucking gives a shit?
Like, that's not gonna pay off in any interesting way, and it's not like it's not a particularly interesting expression of like the connection between Sakura and Ino at all. It's just sort of like I am not going to invest in the idea like, oh, maybe Sakura really cares about Sasuke, because like the show doesn't like, I've read Naruto before. I've watched Naruto before. Like, the show doesn't care about that, and so yeah. I'm not gonna fall for that.
Yeah, obviously, no way.
It's just not a very interesting way to pit these characters against each other at all.
No, especially since like we're supposed to be past this, right?
Yeah, right.
Like they had that whole thing during the preliminaries.
But like, clearly nobody's really thought about what that relationship actually looks like progressed past that point. So they're just still doing the same thing.
They should be gay.
Our stances on this are well documented.
Yeah. And so, like, okay. I have something to say about them running into Shikamaru and Choji and Asuma.
Okay.
So, like, did they just, like, not invite Ino?
God, I guess not. Like, I didn't really realize this until like you were listing the names of the people in that scene. I was like, oh wait, shit, no, they didn't invite Ino at all.
Right, because that's the first time she's hearing about them training too. So like, not only did they not invite Ino to go out to eat, they didn't invite her to train.
Oh my god, Asuma,
Get
it together!
Jesus Christ, dude,
the fuck is wrong with you?
Like, that scene could have been, like, functionally identical if Ino just, like, knew why they were there.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, right, because like, we see the training, and it's like, oh, Choji is, like, rolling at Shikamaru really fast, and Shikamaru has to stop him with his shadows, right? I'm like, sure, okay, it makes sense that Ino doesn't have, like, a ton to contribute to that specific thing that's about, like, you know, pushing Shikamaru's limits further with, like, his shadow possession jutsu.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, she doesn't know about it. Unbelievable.
Yeah, right. Or even if just like the greeting that Asuma gives Ino when they see each other is like, I thought you were working today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Like any like sign that Asuma cares even a little bit about Ino, that Asuma has thought about Ino even once in his life would be appreciated.
Yeah. God damn.
God damn. You know, as Ino and Sakura move off to the hospital, we get some shots of the other teams. I do have to like eat my words a little bit about what I said about like most people not getting new techniques, because like I do remember from like the bit we see of Neji here, it's like, oh yeah, Neji's gonna get his like spinning thing that he does for the finals or whatever. So like, I guess he is learning a new thing. So you know, there's a little more of that than I remembered. So that's nice.
Yeah, and I think it's cute that Tenten is helping with that.
Yeah, I mean, like, because it's like, hey, that's a, I mean, it doesn't speak well to Tenten's capabilities as, like, a person who gets to win fights in Naruto, but, like, you know, she's pretty well suited to, like, helping train with that specific ability.
Yeah.
We get a shot of, like, I'm not really sure what they're doing to train Shino, right? Like, we get a shot of, like, Kurenai and Kiba are running at him with Kunai, and, like, he's just releasing a bunch of bugs from his hands, and I don't know what the training plan is there. It all seems kind of disconnected.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Because, like... How does Shino get stronger?
Like, he probably just grows better bugs in him.
Yeah. Later we get a lot of, like, oh, this is a specific, like, species that I have brought along for this particular trick.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know...
Yeah, like, I'm not really sure what, like... how he benefits from having a bunch of, like, bugs shoot out of him, other than, like, I don't know, that's probably pretty uncomfortable for him, because of the bugs gotta come out of his skin.
Yeah.
I think the other scene in this sequence is, like, kind of weird, because, like, it is this silent scene of the Sand Siblings being told something, which, like, maps pretty cleanly onto a scene that I believe will be, like, in the first of our episodes next week, but, like, we're just kind of getting it here with no dialogue this time.
That's funny.
It's an interesting choice, I suppose. But yeah, that's what I had to say about this half of the episode. Is there anything else you want to touch on?
No, let's move on.
Okay.
A nurse brings Ino and Sakura to Sasuke's room, but he's not there. His clothes are gone too. The nurse rushes out of the room to fetch the doctor and look for Sasuke. Sakura worries he left to seek out Orochimaru. We see Kakashi one arm climbing up a rocky cliff with Sasuke waiting for him at the top. Sakura and Ino head over to Lee's room to find he's missing too. Luckily, he's just outside the window, doing some ill-advised push-ups. He collapses at just one away from his goal. Rock Lee wakes up in his hospital bed and wonders who brought him the flower. Naruto finally summons something other than a tadpole. A tadpole with two legs.
Sakura and Ino get led into Sasuke's hospital room, and he's not there. I don't have a ton to say about this scene precisely. I'm, like, mostly bringing it up now, because I'm going to circle back around to it again a little later.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in your mind, if you've seen the episode especially. We cut over to Kakashi, and, like, what Kakashi is doing is another one of these things that, like, I'm not entirely sure of the utility of.
Yeah, right. Okay, so, like, the thing about climbing up... a cliff with one arm for training is that you then have to go back down and climb it with the other arm so you're symmetrical.
Right, but even beyond that, like, I mean, I'm sure it's a good workout, but, like, I don't know what situation you're gonna, like...
Can't you just walk vertically up that
bitch? You can just walk vertically up that bitch. Like, I don't know why you're doing this. There's this other, like, really weird shot in this bit of Kakashi climbing the cliff where, like, he looks like he's about to fall, and then we get, like, this zoom in on his, like, throbbing brain as he, like, pulls it back up, which is just, like, it sure is a way to communicate something. I don't know if I can tell you what.
He opened a gate.
Okay. Oh, did he open a gate?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't even think about that as a thing that Kakashi can do, but, like,
Yeah, he opened the first gate, and then gave him, like, a little push.
Okay. All right. Well, I feel like a fucking fool right now, though. You got my ass. I'm retiring as the Naruto expert of this podcast. I hope you can find somebody else next episode.
No. We can just swap positions. Can you be funny?
Okay. I'll try. Can you look up who worked on every episode of Naruto?
Can you still do that?
Okay. All right. All right. Let's just keep what we got going on here.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Anyway, no surprise to anybody that Sasuke is out here waiting to get trained by Kakashi. We go back to the hospital. Sakura and Ino are led into Rock Lee's room. The nurse says the exact same shit that she said going into Sasuke's room. They, like, walk into, like, an identical room, like, basically all of the same shots again.
Yeah, I mean, like, to be fair, it's a hospital. Hospital rooms look the same.
Hospital rooms look the same, but, like, the way stuff is, like, displaced... is, like, I mean, I'm not gonna get out of the production's ass for, like, oh, I can't believe you didn't draw two, like, different,
you didn't draw two different identical hospital rooms.
But it's just very funny to me, like, how these two scenes play out, like, so, like, pr- precisely the same way. Yeah. And, like, so close to each other. Like, it just really draws attention to itself in a way that I couldn't avoid remarking on. Like especially because, like, in the manga, like, when they find Lee, like, Sakura and Ino are just, like, waiting out in the hospital courtyard, like, wondering where Sasuke went, and then, like, they realize Lee is behind them doing push-ups. So it's like this,
Yeah, they didn't have to reuse that room at all.
Yeah. But, you know, they gotta draw someone out of it again. Like, our first two episodes this week are both just adapting one chapter again. So there's some, like, there's some attempts to pad for time. Speaking of attempts to pad for time, in the manga, the first... when Rock Lee is doing push-ups, the first number we hear him say is 199. In the anime... The anime at Rock Lee starts at 190, so we just get this really long scene of him, like, painstakingly doing 9 push-ups, like, 1-hour push-ups before collapsing, which is really...
Oh my god.
It is very transparent in a way I can't help but be charmed by.
It's really funny. Right, and it's just, like, grueling because they're, like... The nurse, Sakura, and Ino are all just, like, kind of standing around being like,
oh, jeez, you should be doing this. Please stop. Like, please. And then we get to, like, this very weird structural point for the episode where we get, like... Okay. So in the manga version of this scene, like, we don't get the flashback of Sakura and Ino. We don't get the scene of Sakura and Ino in the flower shop until, like, they have a flashback to that whole scene here. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think it makes sense, especially if you're just gonna, like, kind of, like, expand out. Like, here's, like, Sakura's day as she, like, goes towards the hospital to, like, place that chronologically. But then we do still get the weird decision of, we get a flashback to that scene, and then we get, like, a little extra bit at the end we didn't see before of Sakura and Ino, like, talking about how Lee won't, how Lee might not be able to, like, recover and be a ninja again. And it just feels like a strange choice because this isn't a reveal to us.
Yeah, like, we know.
We know. So it's just, like, it becomes this point of, like, oh, the show just, like, hid this information from us that we already knew until, like, a point where it was ostensibly more dramatic for us, but, like, it really wasn't. It's just kind of some weird choices being made here.
Yeah. So...
So
Rock Lee falls down.
Rock Lee falls down, yeah. And Sakura's like, why do boys always push themselves so hard? And he was like, I don't know, I'm not a boy, and I'm just fucking sitting there, like, I can't believe this shit. Like, I can believe this shit, but also, like, come on.
Yeah, right? Like,
try a little harder. You don't gotta, like, sit here and tell us about, like, the emotions that only boys can understand of, like, wanting to, like, push yourself and be good at something. Like, what are you doing here?
God.
It's just, like, super infantilizing of, like, Sakura and Ino, who just don't, like... Like, who...
Yeah, right? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? You're supposed to be rivals.
So you're, like, you're rivals to each other. You are, like... You have, like, the same job as Rock Lee. You are, like, went through, like, a lot of the same education, except I guess you went to girl class and, like... Maybe that's what boy class was, is it's where you learn to, like, be self-destructive in, like, pursuit of your personal growth. But, like, I don't know, it's just, like, I get them being uncomfortable about, like, seeing Lee, like, try to push himself in the face of, like, something he might not be able to overcome, but it just feels absurd that they're like, oh, I can't understand why he could possibly be feeling this way because I'm a girl.
God damn.
I'm sick of gender. They gotta stop putting it in here.
They gotta
cut this shit out.
Yeah. Fucking dudes aren't allowed to talk about gender anymore. Especially from the mouths of girls, right?
Like, yeah. It's unbelievable. But that's basically what I have to say about this episode. If we are good to move on.
Yeah, let's press on. Episode 56. Live or die. Risk it all to win it all. Naruto is making slow progress and collapses from exhaustion. We see Anko talking to the Hokage, She regrets not being able to handle Orochimaru in the forest, and the Hokage reassures her that nobody could have, and she shouldn't blame herself. Jiraiya decides Naruto isn't getting anywhere in his 3 weeks of training, so he takes him out. Around town to bathe, have a meal he really enjoys, and see the girl he likes, laying it on a little too thick that he's planning on Naruto dying. Naruto only barely catches on. On the outskirts of town, Jiraiya knocks Naruto out and carries him off. When Naruto awakes, Jiraiya finally lays it out for him. He's going to put Naruto in a situation where his life depends on the summoning jutsu, and if he still can't muster his red chakra then, he'll just die, then pushes him down a huge spike chasm without giving him time to process anything.
Okay. So, I mean, to start with, I want to talk about, like, how this episode looks a little bit. Specifically, I want to highlight the animation director this time, Chikara Sakurai. Chikara Sakurai has been a key animator on the show, like, fairly regularly up to this point, but this is his first episode as an animation director. And I think, like, the work we get from that is, like, really good. Like, there are a lot of really fun, cartoony, expressive moments in this episode, but, you know, it also has some real moments where, like, the quieter and, like, more subtle emotion, like, shines as well. I think this is, like, a very nice-looking episode, just in terms of, like, what an episode, of, like, at this scale of production could be like. It is interesting that we're, like, basically, like, we're two for two, now we're the best-looking episode of the week is an episode that, like, expands a Jiraiya scene and makes him look way worse. But,
yeah?
Yeah. But, like, before we really get into that thing, I want to talk about Anko.
Yeah, let's talk about Anko.
Yeah, so I've talked on this podcast previously about how I was, like, the last time I went through Naruto, I was, like, really very invested in Anko. I think this scene is kind of, like, the last piece of it. Even though watching it now, I can, like, I think this scene doesn't actually do a lot for her and is mostly there to be, like, hey, and here's a way that the Third Hokage is, like, kind of like a nice, well-intentioned guy, right? Like, the scene is barely about her, but also, like, I'm still sitting here looking at it, and, like, if you will permit me to do some heavy lifting on behalf of the show, I do kind of want to get into it.
Yeah.
Right, so the rest of the scene is that, you know, Anko is, like, coming to apologize for, like, not, like, killing Orochimaru and dying in the process back in the Forest of Death. Mm-hmm. And the Hokage is trying to be like, no, you know, you like, you don't have any, like, responsibility towards doing that. Like, you don't have any connection to him anymore. Like, you should just, like, live your life. And, like, you know, when it comes down to it, we'll all fight as best as we can. And, like, you don't have to, like, take that personal responsibility onto yourself beyond that. And, like, just tells her to not blame herself before leaving, right? And, so for one thing, this doesn't really seem to, like, put Anko that much at ease. And I think there's, like, a way you can read this that, like, especially in terms of, like, what we saw imparted onto, like, children throughout the course of the Chunin exams, it's like, okay, this is what you learn when you're being a ninja. And, like, being told all of this stuff that the Third Hokage is telling her isn't really all that helpful. Like, it's just a bunch of stuff that's kind of hard to, like, align with, like, what you were taught as a ninja about how you need to be, like, ready to die for the mission. You need to, like, be willing to accept your death all the time. You need to be, like, like, you know, so much of, like, ninja education in terms of, like, the Chunin exams that we saw was, like, just all about, like, basically being ready to destroy yourself for something. And so, like it's easy to see her being kind of, like, dissatisfied with an attempt to reassure her that's basically like, yeah, but I mean, don't do all of that stuff that's, like, the primary thing you've been taught to do, right? Like, it is a difficult position for her to resolve. There's another interesting element in terms of, like, the Third Hokage tells her that she doesn't really have any connection to Orochimaru anymore, but there's an extent in Naruto to which we see that, like, in many cases, the person who was, like, your jonin leader or whatever when you're a genin is, like, the most significant person in your life in a lot of ways, in terms of, like, I don't think it's a stretch to say that for a lot of Naruto characters, the jonin leader is, like, a more important figure than their parent.
Yeah,
like, their parents, like I mentioned, this especially gets into the case when, like, you've got people who grew up when there were, like, wars happening. Like, we never see Yanko's family, so I guess we don't know for sure, and, like, we don't know for sure if they're, like, dead or not, but, like, it's probably a safe assumption, because that's just kind of how being in the village goes, right? So...
Yeah, right, like, if you're a shinobi, right? If you're a shinobi, and your parents aren't dead, then your parents are, like, cool old badasses that everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, and I suspect that's not who Anko's parents are, because we never see them.
Yeah.
And so there's this real sense of, like, the Third Hokage is just telling her a lot of shit that she can't really, like, resolve. Like, it's hard for her to stop caring about, like, the like, weird, complicated connection she has to Orochimaru. It's hard for her to stop caring about, like, you know, all of the things she's internalized about how being a good shinobi means being willing to die for your village, right? Like, it's just, like it's just this big mess of conflicting things that doesn't, like, do much for her. And I think it also casts the Third Hokage in an interesting way, where, like, he comes across as kind of this, I don't know, like, this is in some level supposed to be a scene being like, yeah, he's like a nice guy who has people's best interests in heart, but he also kind of comes across as, like, this sad old guy who doesn't really, like... You know, like, he was the Hokage, and then he, like, had his successor appointed, and then his successor died, and he had to be the Hokage again. And, like, he's just kind of, like, he is a guy who is, like, kind of soft in a lot of ways. He's kind of, you know, he is willing to, like, say all of these things about how, like, oh, you don't need to worry about this. You don't need to, like, put yourself at risk like this. But also, like, all of the systems that put people in those places are still there. And it casts him in this light of, like, yeah, here's this, like, sad old guy who kind of wishes things are different, but, like, not enough to use his position to, like, try and make them be different in any way that really matters.
Right, because, like, I can really see him being in kind of the situation where it's just, like, yeah, right, like, this sucks, but this is how we do wars, and hey, there's a war coming.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think there's, like, some really interesting stuff there, and, like, it does leave me in a position of still being like, yeah, I bet you could do some really interesting stuff with Anko as a character, even if I kind of recognize, like, more so than I did last time, that, like, the investment to that isn't really there and, like, was never really there.
Yeah. Totally.
But, you know, after we get that, this sort of quiet, serious, dramatic scene, we go back to Naruto and Jiraiya, and Jiraiya has decided that he is going to throw Naruto off a cliff, and so... He does this big comedy tour of the village of you know, trying to give him like a nice last day or whatever. It's a very weird bit. It's, like, entirely original to the anime. In the manga, Naruto just, like, collapses after his training, and Jiraiya's like, okay, I'm going to do something drastic. And there's, like, maybe room for some ambiguity about, like, if he's actually going to be like, yeah, this kid is going to die, or if he's just going to, like, put him in a dangerous situation. But, like, here it's very explicit that Jiraiya's like, yeah, this kid. It's very possible that this kid's gonna die, so I'm just gonna... I'm gonna try and give him a nice last day, but also, like, not really try that hard, because he's just also kind of really mean to Naruto this whole time.
Yeah, right? Like, the... he just fucking ditches the restaurant.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, go, like, bother this girl, and, like, she's probably gonna hit you, but, like, you know, it's, this is just what you do or whatever, and it's just, like... He does not come out of the scene looking good. It's just
he just really doesn't.
It's like, oh, this guy sucks, maybe. Like, this isn't a fun guy at all. This is just a
Wait a second.
I thought he was kinda cool. Like, cool enough for me to, like, in spite of him being, like, a shitty pervert. But, like, in this episode he just kinda sucks. And, like, it's not gonna, like, like, I'm not going to hold it against the character long-term, because this is just kind of a weird episode in that regard, but, like...
Yeah.
It's not a great scene. It's not, like, very funny. Like, I mean, there's some funny drawings, but, like, the actual, like, material is, like, pretty, pretty weak a lot of the time. It's just like, yeah, I'm gonna be a dick to this kid and, like, do this extremely half-assed, like, here's your nice final day thing. And it's... I don't know, it just, like... It just kind of feels at odds with, like, the sense that Jiraiya actually, like, cares about Naruto's growth at all.
Yeah, right? Like,
This would have been a really good scene if, like, Jiraiya was just more genuine.
Yeah, right? Because, like, I'm not going to be like, oh, I can't believe he threw Naruto off a cliff, because, like, whatever, it's like a shonen manga training arc. Sometimes you do really drastic things for the sake of that, and, like, that's just how the genre works, right? Like,
yeah.
It is entirely in the fact that, like, the whole scene is a big joke about how, like, uncaring Jiraiya is towards Naruto. In a way that feels really dissonant to me.
Like, I could totally see Jiraiya being somebody who would, like, promise to treat someone to a meal, show mm-hmm. up, have the meal, and then realize that he doesn't have his fucking wallet.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think there are bits with Jiraiya to that extent that, like, in the manga later that are probably what this is drawing from. But, like, this the like, potential severity of the scene makes it feel all off. Like,
yeah. Right, and, like, even that, like, change in framing just a little bit shifts the punchline from, like, haha, Jiraiya fucking ditched this kid, into Jiraiya, you fucking idiot.
Jiraiya fucking ditched this kid that he is planning to kill.
Right. If, like, the joke and, like, the drama in that scene wasn't, like, Naruto eats a lot and then Jiraiya disappears, if it's, like, Naruto eats a lot and then Jiraiya's just, like...
It's like, okay, I didn't have that much money, I'm sorry.
Oh god, I didn't have that much money.
I do want to shout out in the scene, I think this is the first appearance of Naruto's Froggy Wallet, and I love the Froggy Wallet. I think it's
adorable. I love the Froggy Wallet. How fucking serendipitous that Naruto just so happened to have a Froggy Wallet.
It's like destiny. The last thing I have to touch on in this half of the episode is, like, so when the actual act of, like, pushing Naruto off a cliff happens,
yeah,
it is framed in this way that, like, so Jiraiya pokes Naruto in the forehead.
Yeah.
And then Naruto proceeds to go flying back, like, 50 feet.
Yep.
Right? Like, because he's, like, standing on one side of, like, a bunch of brush, and then he gets pushed back. And, like, he goes, like, from that single poke, goes flying, like, all the way to the other side of the brush. And then, like, we get the shot of him flying and, like, coming out of it. And, like, we realize the scope of how far Naruto had been sent flying by that. And it just makes the whole thing... It just makes the whole thing feel kind of ridiculous.
That's a very strong poke.
It was a very strong poke. Like, look at this shit. Kid went flying.
Yeah, kid went fucking miles.
Yeah, do you have anything else you want to touch on before we move on to the second half of this episode?
No, let's go ahead. Iruka's teaching Konohamaru's class about the Big Stone Hokage Face Monument when the Hokage shows up. The Hokage gives a little speech about how important it is to have someone you want to protect. And Naruto wakes up in some kind of creepy, wet mind palace, where the Nine-Tailed Fox is locked away. Naruto faces the guy and finally realizes what the Red Chakra is. He steals himself and demands rent in the form of chakra for staying in his body. The fox laughs it off and compliments Naruto's courage and gifts him with some chakra. Naruto wakes up and tries the summoning jutsu again, this time summoning Gamabunta and saving his life. Gamabunta isn't happy about being in the spike chasm.
Yeah, so the first part of this episode, the first part of, like, this section of the episode is you know, Iruka teaching his kids and, like, talking about the Hokages and the third Hokage showing up. And, like, I just want to say, this is, like, I think this scene looks, like, incredible, right? Like, not in, like, a super, or not, like, the most eye-catching way, but, like, it is just, like, quietly very impressive the whole time. Like, both in the sense of, like, there's, like, a lot of, like, individually drawn kids in this scene who are, like, mostly kept track of and, like, given a lot of, like, expression work and, like a lot of the movement is just sort of, like, really, like either, like, appealingly cartoony or, like, really, like understated and natural. Like, there's this really great cut where, like, the third Hokage is walking past all the kids and there's this, like, really subtle rotation on his face, and then, like, it cuts to the kids and, like, they're all, like, turning their heads to look after him in this, like, staggered way that's, like, timed in multiple, like, phases, like, across the cut, where I'm just kind of like, wow, so somebody went, like, really all out in this one. The best guess on who like is responsible for this is, like, this whole scene is presumed to be Toshi Hisakaya's work. And again, like, very impressive stuff. Like, I really love how this scene looks.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what I had to actually say about like the contents of the scene, now that I've said like my piece about how it looked, but I'll get there, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Hokage just wants everybody to be safe.
He wants everybody to be safe. He wants everybody to be, like, you know, nice and care about each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful sentiment. It seems like maybe a little too late from him, given what his job is.
Yeah, and
but
like
how little time he has left in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, it is another scene that is trying to, like...
Oh my god.
Huh.
He had that conversation with Unko and was just like, oh god, I gotta get to these kids sooner, and then immediately left to go talk to children.
Oh my god. Like, I got big plans. I'm like, okay, like, what? Once these 2 days after over, I'm gonna like reform the whole thing. I'm gonna like,
oh my god.
I'm gonna change all the curriculums, but like, we just gotta get through these tutoring exams first. We gotta handle this Orochimaru shit.
Yeah, you know, this Naruto kid has given me some ideas. Like, maybe the secret isn't actually that it's, like, cool to, like, give your life on the line of duty. Maybe all you really need is, like, the drive to protect someone. And then that can carry you through anything. I have to go tell these children right now. And then it goes.
I've waited my entire life.
Spoiler alert, and then he fucking dies.
I'm really loving this, like, cartoonishly tragic picture we're painting of Hiruzen Sarutobi.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's pretty good. There's like a bit in this that I do think is genuinely very cute. It's like, the entire time, like, Konohamaru is just kind of like talking shit in his head, but then with like, the third Hokage is like, and my grandson, who I love, is here, and like, Konohamaru is just like beaming like an idiot, like he's so happy, like regardless of how much he's like, yeah, my grandpa's a fucking idiot loser, that like he just can't keep it up when his grandpa's being nice to him. I think it's cute.
Yeah, it's really good. I like Konohamaru a lot.
Yeah, Konohamaru is fun.
I mean, like, I don't know how much I like him necessarily when he gets older.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I don't remember, like, basically anything about him from when he's older.
Yeah. But it's like, he's like a good goofy kid character to have, like...
Yeah, totally.
Well, like, it is fun to have, like, this kid who, like, looks up to the main character in ways that are, like, both, like, genuine and also, like, kind of ridiculously heightened. Mm-hmm. And all, it's... I don't know. It's just a nice kind of character to have around. And I think Konohamaru is a good one of those. And I think Ikue Itani's voice acting, like, is certainly helping.
Oh, yeah, totally. But,
yeah.
Enough of the fucking kindergarten class.
Yeah, Naruto goes into his fucking mind prison. I fucking love how this shit looks. It's
so good.
It's so good. Like, it is leaning so hard to, like, a lot of the shit that Masashi Kishimoto is, like, best at drawing and designing, which is, like, these super, like, cluttered structures and, there's, like, this really, like... Like the whole thing is cast in this, like, dim yellow lighting that just sort of, like, washes out all the other colors, except for, like, when, like, the fox shows up. And every shot is just, like, framed as joy that Naruto looks fucking tiny, and it is just really cool. It just looks great. I'll probably put a few pictures of it in the
Twitter?
On the Twitter. Yeah, sorry. God. Don't know how to get there. I think this is, like, a great-looking scene. I think it's, like, a great-looking environment. It's just cool.
Yeah, it's just really fucking cool. This is really good. Like, it's just a good fucking location. It's a good fucking environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit funny that this is, like, Naruto's fucking Mind Palace Fox Jail, but, like,
mm-hmm.
That's fine.
It is appropriately dramatic for what it is. I think it really, like... I think it serves as, like, a really great, like... I mean, both as an... Like, yeah, like we said, it's a great environment. I think it also serves, like, as a really great lead-up to, like, actually seeing the fox for the first time.
Yeah.
I also really like the nine-tailed fox. I like that he's just, like, this fucking angry asshole who's, like... He's like, I'm gonna fucking kill you, kid. I don't care that I'm in your body. I'm gonna fuck you up. I'm gonna... Like, just fucking hollering at him and, like, posturing at the instant Naruto's, like, being kind of dramatic at him. He's like, oh, all right, you're all right, kid. I still hate your ass, but you're okay.
Yeah, I love this motherfucker so much. Right, because, like, if he was just, like, big scary monster that, like, Naruto had to keep locked up or whatever, that's, like, that's one thing, but it's so much more charming if he's just kind of playing.
He probably isn't, like, lying about what he wants to do, but also he's, like...
Yeah, but also he's, like, charmed by Naruto in a way that's, like, really charming, right?
He's like, well, I can't really do anything else. I'll just fuck around a bit. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, right? It's so good.
It's so good. So Naruto successfully gets access to the Fox's Chakra, and he summons Gamabunta. Gamabunta's in this episode for like 10 seconds, but I fucking love Gamabunta. He's so cool.
I fucking love Gamabunta. For those not in the know, because I realize that this is just like another name we dropped with Hunt describing who this guy is.
Mm-hmm. Gamabunta is like a massive toad who talks like a Yakuza boss.
Uh-huh.
Got a big fucking knife. He's the coolest.
Yeah, and he smokes a huge pipe. And he's the coolest guy in Naruto.
You couldn't even get through. Like, he is the coolest guy in Naruto, but, like, damn, you couldn't even get through that without laughing.
Yeah, he's the coolest. He just is. I'm sorry. It's just true. He's got, like, scars all over him. He's got, like, fucking piercings on his tongue.
He's got a big coat that he's wearing all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yes.
But he's just a big fuck-off huge toad. This guy rules.
I mean, that's my piece on this episode.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It's kind of amazing, like, how much better this episode gets in the second half.
Yeah, no shit. All right. Well, I mean, I think that's that. For the whole thing, if you don't have anything left to say about this episode.
No, I'm good.
Alright, well, what are we watching next week?
Every time you ask me this question, I'm like, shit, I have to remember what episode we're watching this week, and I can't do that, even though I am looking at, like, multiple Google Docs that have the episodes that we watched this week open at them. But, okay, so next week we are watching episodes 57, 58, and 59 of Naruto.
Awesome.
Look forward to it.
Yeah. Hey, did you like the show? I did too. Hey, you want to help support the show? Check out our Patreon. That's patreon.com/KonohaCrush. There, for just $3 a month, you get access to episodes up to a week early. And for a little bit more money, you get a little bit more stuff. And if you want to see some of the images we talked about during the episode, you can check out our Twitter. That is @KonohaCrush, all one word, KonohaCrush. I stream sometimes. I don't know. You can find me places.
Yeah, I mean, like, Gwen's Twitter is linked in the podcast Twitter, so you go there, you can find her there. But also, you know, our Twitter is ResiArt, right?
Twitter, it's ResiArts.
Ah, shit! I fucked up so bad. I can't do your plugs for you anymore. I have to stop doing this.
All right. No, that's okay. Yeah. You'll fucking find it. I believe in you. If you want more from me, I wholeheartedly believe in your ability to do so. And so I think that's basically going to be it for this week. Thanks for listening. And remember, there is no such thing as filler.